We have been banging our head on this disease for about 7 years now. So fusarium hardlock on cotton etiology and control. Again, you've seen this slide before, but for some of you who have just come in, what we're calling hardlock is when the fiber does not extend beyond the locule and you have these kind of hard orange slices. And the reason that's a problem is that when the mechanical harvesters come through, those bowls end up on the ground and they're not picked up by the spindles are. Whereas with the healthy bowls, it's much easier to harvest. The kinds of symptoms that we were looking at early on this are pretty slight. We're not looking for massive lesions or anything. They start out very light, a lot of times alongside the seed coats. And you can see that you really wouldn't expect this to be from stink bug because the lesion is on the inside of the seed coat and it's very small. And in cutting open hundreds and hundreds of bowls on this when we first started, we oftentimes found that we could isolate Fusarium verticilloides. But we also isolate a lot of other organisms. So this whole etiology process was confusing from the start. But one of the things that came up pretty obvious is that this was not the hardlock that was caused by stink bug damage, which at the end, when the bowls open, the symptoms are very similar. But typically with stink bug, you'll have an introduction of a lot of other organisms, a lot of bacteria. The bowls will smell when you cut them open. It's the stink bug hardlock is not what we're calling the fusarium hardlock. I think we're pretty comfortable in differentiating those two. But the whole hardlock is a complex, just as is the bowl rot complex. There's a lot of organisms involved, insects, bacteria, fungi. So it's a pretty complex system. But again, we're pretty comfortable now with being able to identify what fusarium hardlock is and then some of the control strategies that are available to us. Some of the symptoms, again, that are included are the discoloration in the peduncle of the vascular system. We can isolate the Fusarium verticilloides from that, similar to what you would expect if you had Vasinfectum, Fusarium wilt organism. But you can't isolate it from the stems. At least we haven't been able to. And that's one of the things that kind of got us thinking on this idea of the pathogen entering the flowers or the bowls and moving into the plant rather than coming up from the plant as with the typical Fusarium wilts. But in these discolored areas, it's pretty easy to isolate the Fusarium verticilloides. And this is what it looks like. Again, if you're not familiar with the taxonomy of Fusarium, it looks like a lot of the other Fusaria. It's a pretty tough organism. This was Fusarium maniliforme for a long time, and then they split maniliforme up into Polyphyllotum, which we also run into oftentimes, and verticilloides and other organisms. One of the characteristics of verticilloides, though, is that it produces fumonisin, which is something that, since we're finding it in cotton bowls, we were wondering if that was a problem as well. You've already seen this slide also our ideas that the Fusarium conidia come in, move down through the flower and get into the seeds and then colonize the seeds and cause disease in those seeds during the bowl development. Inoculations in the greenhouse with the Fusarium verticilloides show that we could increase disease by about 4 or 5%. But there's always hardlock, whether we're in the field or in the greenhouse. We can't produce a cotton plant that doesn't have any hardlock on any of the bowls. So there's probably a physiological factor involved, and that may be something that plays an important aspect when we're looking at new varieties. Dan went out last year in 2007 and looked at a lot of the variety trials that we had, and he saw differences in hardlock and co-located plantings with some of the varieties that we'll be seeing in production in the next few years. So this is something that we're going to have to watch for. Results in the field, by misting the Fusarium on the flowers or by transferring the Fusarium conidia in dry spore suspensions onto the flowers, moving them onto the flowers by having colonized thrips with Fusarium, putting thrips on Fusarium auger, then moving them on the flowers. All those things work in getting Fusarium into the flower and then into the developing bowl. So, fumonisin is one of the things that we thought we needed to take a look at. Obviously, fumonisin is a mycotoxin, and it's very important in different industries, depending on what the final market is for the feed. It's a mycotoxin. It's associated with human esophageal cancer, but that association is a little bit controversial. But it's definitely highly fatal in equine central nervous system disease in horses. The horses start walking around in circles, quit feeding, and drop. Sheep fed infected corn have developed acute kidney failure and liver inflammation, but the cattle, where a lot of our cottonseed goes to, are less sensitive to the mycotoxin. Cattle have a threshold of 50 parts per million that is monitored and regulated. Swine, 10 parts per million, and horses, you just have to keep it away from them entirely. They're less than 5 parts per million. They have kits for monitoring this, if you're from the Midwest, you're very familiar with the monitoring of fumonisin in the grain industry. We use this particular kit, which is a competing horseradish peroxidase test, to get an idea of the presence of fumonisin in the bulls. And what we found was whether the bulls were diseased, and our type 1 through type 4 here, type 1 would be maybe one lock on the bull would have hard lock, whereas type 4, all of the locks would have hard lock symptoms. We were not able to find the fumonisin in those bull samples and seed samples. However, if we grew the fumonisin on PDA, different isolates, we had over 5 parts per million. So the isolates that we're getting from the cotton will produce fumonisin if they're grown on auger, but we're not finding the fumonisin in the cotton bolls or the cotton seeds. This is what the assay looks like. You can see, again, it's a competing assay, so the lighter the color or the less the reaction, the higher the inoculum level is. And this particular assay, lower threshold is 0.2 parts per million. And we were able to freeze the flowers and bring them out, and freeze the bulls and bring them out, and we still didn't find the fumonisin in there. So the fumonisin, if it's there, it's pretty tied up, but we don't think that it's really occurring. So what we thought we'd do is try and figure this out a little bit. And we've got PDA up there, that's potato dextrose auger. CSA is cotton seed auger, where we used cotton meal filtered it, added it to water, filtered the water, and then added dextrose and auger to it to make a cottonseed auger. And then we have a cotton flour auger, where we freeze-dried cotton flours and did the same thing, ground it up, made a suspension, filtered it, added dextrose and auger to it. And you can see the components of that is that the crude protein is much higher on the cotton augers than on the potato dextrose auger. And now remember, on the potato dextrose auger, we had higher levels of fumonisin production, whereas on the others we didn't. We looked at the colony growth. Colony growth didn't seem to matter. The fungus grew well no matter what the wood auger it was placed on. But when we looked at the fumonisin production on the PDA, again, we were at about 4 parts per million, but we were at half that on the cottonseed auger and the cotton flour auger. So one of the things we're thinking about is if the cotton oils are interfering with the fumonisin production. If you think about crops that oftentimes have fumonisin mycotoxins associated with, they're the grains and that have more starch and more simple sugars associated with them rather than cottonseed, which has a high amount of cottonseed oil in it. So we thought we would look at the amount of oil in diseased seed and healthy seed. And you can see we really didn't see much of a difference here, indicating that the fusarium is in fact not utilizing the cottonseed oil. Now the question is the cottonseed oil actually interfering with the fumonisin production? From our auger test, it looks like it is. And there isn't anything in the literature to give us any indication as to exactly why this might occur. But it does look like that even though we're finding verticilloides in cottonseed, the concern for the mycotoxin fumonisin being associated with that cottonseed or cottonseed oil is probably minimal. So high oil content in cottonseed or the cotton flours, the bull development itself, it seems to reduce the potential for fumonisin production by fusarium verticilloides. And the next thing I want to talk about briefly is some of the control strategies that we've tried to develop. In past attempts, the controlling boll rots, if you look at the 60s, 70s, and 80s literature, the fungicides were applied after the bolls were open, after the symptoms were obvious, and that was the strategy. And sometimes they would work. If you had a real wet year and if you had a lot of the other boll rot organisms, the diplodias and all that, you could have effects. But oftentimes it wasn't very successful, and it never really became a wide practice except in extremely wet years. But what we did is we applied the fungicides to the flowers when we came up with this idea that the fusarium was infecting the flower rather than the open bowl. This was a presentation that Kenny Siebold made here at the Beltwide in 2004, and this was a study that was sponsored by Cerex Agree, where we used thiophanite methyl, or Thompson M, in a multi-state project in the southeast. We all did the same trials. Kenny put all this data together, and what he shows really is that it didn't matter if we used a half pound or a pound of Thompson, those first two orange bars there. It didn't really matter if we used a 7 or a 14-day schedule, the next two bars. But what did matter was the number of sprays. And you can see as we went from 2, 3 to 4 sprays, we were picking up about 100 pounds on each spray. And that's something that we found consistently. Because of the 8 weeks of bloom of cotton in the southeast, you're going to have to do multiple sprays to get the most effect from the control program. Now, maybe as we refine Dan's research, we might be able to say, well, the environmental conditions are not so conducive, so you can skip this week, or you better put it on this week, depending on the conditions. We'll have to see how that works out. But that has been consistently found year after year. So the idea is that verticillioides is a causal agent, not the causal agent, but a causal agent of hardlock and cotton in the southeast, and that fungicide treatments made during bloom resulted in reduction in disease and increased yields. But we're spraying fungicides on cotton plants early in the growth cycle, which is a little bit different. So we're going to affect the leaf spots. And you can see in the back where Thompson M was applied 3 times versus in the front, we had a big impact on leaf spots. A lot of Alternaria and Cercospora on our leaves usually. And this is where the Thompson M was applied. So what we end up is a pretty complex situation here. When we're applying these fungicides during the bloom stage, we're affecting leaf disease, which affects leaf area, which affects yield, that middle line there. Leaf disease affects number of bowls indirectly, and then the number of bowls is going to affect yield, and leaf disease has an interaction with hardlock sometimes. And then 2 years ago, Bob Camerott reported that thiophanate methyl applications actually affected stink bug activity and reduced stink bug damage. So we've got that consideration in there also. So even though we may be seeing effect of the thiophanate methyl applications on the fusarium hardlock, we're also maybe seeing effect on the stink bug hardlock phase. So it makes it a pretty complex situation. But from our growers' experience over the last several years with the Section 18 that we've had in Florida, the growers who are putting 2 to 4 applications of fungicide or fungicide-insecticide combinations during the bloom period usually have an increase in yield of about 250 pounds per acre or more, depending upon the year. We see that pretty much year in and year out. So that's something that we'd like to take home with. It's going to cost about $50 an acre to put the sprays out. If you're going to put out 3 sprays, that's a guesstimate on what the cost for the chemicals and application would be. The return per acre, if you're increasing by 250 pounds, is going to be at $175. Cost you $50 to put it out, so your net return is about $125. So we really recommend that if you're in an area that's got a hardlock problem, is that you try it out on your own research areas or with some of your growers, have them try out a smaller area of the field and see if it works. And we'd like to hear. But a lot of areas in the southeast are trying this idea of putting fungicides on blooms, and it seems to have an effect on increasing yield for fusarium hardlock control and for leaf spot control and probably some other things as well. But if you do try this out, and we recommend that you try it out with some of your growers, we'd like to hear how it works. Okay. All right. So fusarium verticilloides is an important agent in development of hardlock. Fumonisin was not detected in the bowls sampled. We have not yet detected fumonisin in cotton. Fungicide applications made during bloom reduce the incidence of hardlock and leaf spot and increases yield. And we've had a Section 18. And we're supposed to have a Section 3 in 2008 for the southeast. But I think the EPA is kind of doing their risk bucket on us, and it's getting a little messy. So, again, this research was supported by Cotton Incorporated, United Phosphorus Incorporated, USDARS, and the state of Florida, and we thank them for that. Okay. Thank you. Any questions? Yes. We don't know. There is reports that it is in corn. That it can colonize the ear, travels with the growing plant. We have plants in the greenhouse now where we're trying to determine that and what we're finding. Are you going to talk about that, Prativa? Okay. Okay, I didn't want to steal your thunder, but what we're using is a genetically engineered isolate where we can monitor the gene, and Pratibha's going to talk about that next. But she is finding it in the seedlings as they're coming up, correct? But we haven't grown those all the way up. So yes, it could be, but how important it is in the whole story, we don't know. This is such a common organism, especially on plant debris, that its role in the whole epidemiology may not be very significant. But biologically, it is an important question. Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much.